Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 71. Sure, revenue is great, but have you ever tried engagement? All right, and we are here with our second of the quarter earnings episode.
I think this is the last one.
You know what? You're going to shoot us in the foot, and we're going to end up with a third earnings. It's going to be 3 weeks in a row of doing doubleheaders.
No, doubleheaders, like...
they suck.
Like, I don't know. I love doing these shows, don't get me wrong.
I love doing some doubleheaders
because, you know, we're parents and we have, like, other things that we do in our lives.
Like what? You mean in addition to the fact that we have two other partners?
And jorbs.
And jorbs.
We have clients.
We have things to do.
So we're going to dive right in.
We are. What are we starting off with today?
We're starting off with Bandai Namco. Now, we don't often cover Bandai Namco.
They don't often have anything interesting to say.
They don't. And they're not as big as some of the other companies we cover. But there are some interesting things happening at Bandai Namco that made me want to focus on it.
All right. So walk me through it. What's going on? I know that they're reporting for the trailing 9 months.
Right. So this is the first 9 months of their fiscal year. Again, a lot of Japanese companies, they report on...
trailing.
Right. They report on the to-date fiscal year.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
At the first quarter, they'll report 3 months, then they'll report 6 months at the half year. They don't typically break it down by quarter unless there's a real reason to.
Which is fine. It's just, it's different than how we tend to see things out in North America specifically. We're not even talking about Europe.
Yes. Although Ubisoft, which we'll talk about, did actually have something in there where they were reporting on the 9 months. I wonder if they're thinking about making a shift.
I don't even know. We'll get there.
We'll get there. So real quick on the numbers side.
Yeah.
Bandai Namco net sales were up 2% to 543.5 billion yen. That's 5.18 billion US dollars.
That's impressive.
It is. Yeah, their operating profit was up 1.1% to 72.9 billion yen. That's 694.8 million US dollars. Their net profit was down. And this was one of the things that made me take a hard look at this, because they're not the only one.
Right. And we'll get there because we have to talk about Sega Sammy
exactly.
At the bottom of the show.
And the trends that we're seeing out of Asia, with Capcom being the only one that really bucked the trend.
Yeah.
And Square Enix, because of the way that their units are organized and where their profit centers are.
They also have a fair amount of split between the East and the West.
Sure. So Bandai Namco's net profits were down 4.3% to 50.6 billion yen. That's $482.3 million. They did raise their projections for sales, operating profit, recurring profit, and net profit. So that's all good.
Question, though, what is it that they're getting recurring profit from? What do they have for subs? Do you know? Did they break it down?
They didn't.
Okay.
They didn't. I know they have some mobile offerings.
Oh, maybe it's mobile stuff then.
Sure, but they also have, like, all the Dragon Ball games. So there's a lot of DLC. So Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Oh,
has
Dragon
DLC.
Ball FighterZ, right.
So they have recurrent revenue from post-launch content.
Okay. All right, go Bamco.
I don't think they have any subs, but...
but they have DLC, which they consider recurring.
And again, those fighting games bring in a lot of revenue.
Right. Well, that's not surprising.
And in fact, let's talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they have a number... they have five divisions.
Right.
And this is also...
as many Japanese companies tend to. They have a number of different revenue streams.
So their network entertainment division, which is gaming, was up 11.4%. Again, no surprise there. We've talked about this over and over and over again about the pandemic and its effect on the industry.
Yep.
Toys and hobby were up 9%. Again...
not surprising. What
the heck
are you going
to do? Those people who do have disposable income aren't spending it on movie theaters and travel and vacations.
No, instead what they are doing is they are filling their office with collectibles after purging their office of collectibles nearly 4 years ago.
Yes. Now, their real entertainment division, which is amusement machines and facilities.
I gotta imagine this is down.
38.5%, in fact.
Wow. Capcom wasn't down that
oddly,
much.
Oddly, they opened 13 locations, but closed 14, and they expect to open 3 more by the end of the year, but close 7 more.
So maybe it's because rent prices, maybe the lease prices are just too much where they were located before.
Maybe. They didn't give a whole lot of color on the reasoning behind that.
Okay.
Their visual and music production, another one, down nearly 50%.
So I wonder if that's from live performances.
It is from live performance.
I would imagine then, yeah, because no one's... We've sat down and we've watched concerts over Zoom and live streamed and stuff like that. It's not the same.
No.
It's just not the same. Even with some of our favorite people in music, it's just not the same.
Whatever is in there, and I tried to find some color on this also, whatever's in their other category is up 7%. IP creation.
What does other even mean?
I don't know.
They didn't give any...
They had no color on that. But these are also in order of the largest contributor to their bottom line to the lowest. So right. There's network entertainment, toys and hobby, real entertainment, visual and music production, other, and then at the very bottom, IP creation.
Okay, so remind us all again, what is Bandai Namco best known for with regards to the IP?
And here's where the money is. Now again, this is the smallest contributor. But they have Dragon Ball. They've got Gundam. They've got One Piece. And they've got Kamen Rider.
Oh, they've got...
Those are their biggest contributors right there. And they have more. Don't get me wrong. But those were the four that were like the biggies.
Yeah. I forgot that they're the Gundam company. And I was going to say that too. I'm just like, I imagine Gundam sales are up because everybody wants to paint some Gundams.
Exactly. And they are. So, they have named a new president and representative director. That's Masaru Kawaguchi. He was formerly the executive vice president and director. And he's been with Bandai since April 1983. So long before it was Bandai Namco.
It was just Bandai.
The former president and representative director, Mitsuaki Taguchi, is going to become the chairman and director.
Okay.
They're also reorganizing. And this is the thing, this is the real reason why I wanted to talk about this.
Okay.
Because as we've talked about, and we will talk about Sega, but we've talked about Square Enix, we've talked about Capcom, we've talked about how usually these Japanese companies being so diversified is a boon. Mm-hmm. It has actually been a real pain in the keister when it comes to the global pepperoni.
The global pepperoni! So if you didn't listen to yesterday, I referred to the global pandemic as the global pepperoni, and now it's going to be known as the global pepperoni, and that is the way we are going to handle things from here on out.
So they're reorganizing, and starting with the first day of the next fiscal year, which is April 1st.
Right.
The five business units that I rattled down.
So network entertainment, which is gaming, toys and hobby, real entertainment, which is amusement machines and facilities, visual and music production, other.
And then IP creation is the fifth one.
And IP creation is the fifth one. Okay, fine. So what are they doing then?
They are condensing that into three business units. So network entertainment and toys and hobby are going to be unified as the entertainment unit. Now, remember, those are their top two contributors. So that's...
It makes sense to combine them.
It does. Additionally, visual and music production and IP creation are being lumped together.
I wonder why that is.
I think it is kind of a vertical integration of, hey, we're going to create the IP and we're going to do all these things with it.
Got it.
So concerts and all of the elements that might spring out of having those IP.
Okay.
So for instance, the movie theater, back when movie theaters were a thing.
Gosh, remember movie theaters?
Remember, what is the name of it where they have the special events in the movie theaters? We saw them before the movies we went to. It's the one night or two night, go see this special anime event in a movie theater.
Oh, right. Yeah, we went and saw Your Name, didn't mm-hmm. we? Yeah, gosh, that was so good. I loved that.
So those two are going to be the IP production unit, and then they're just renaming the real entertainment unit to the amusement unit.
Which
makes sense, and that brings it in line with other Japanese companies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this, two reasons I wanted to pick this up. Obviously, new leadership and the reunification or the restructuring are two of the reasons.
Those are extremely notable.
But another one is this tracks with the trend we've been seeing in Japanese companies for the last year, which is how the pandemic has affected things. The trends are consistent for the most part across gaming. There's a lift.
Well, and it's also been consistent in terms of merchandising because mm-hmm. that's the other portion of the revenue stream diversification that makes sense that's gotten a lift as well. And then it's the real world stuff. So the amusement parks, mm-hmm. the patchy slots and pachinko and all that stuff and the arcade machines. Of course, that's going to be depressed because we are in, what is it? Global pepperoni.
Yes. So we're keeping an eye on these top level trends in Japanese companies because I'm interested to see when these start writing. Again, Nintendo doesn't have this problem because they are so focused on gaming and licensing.
But Nintendo is also not they buck all trends as it is. They don't, we can't lump them in with even other gaming companies because they are always just doing their own thing and very successfully.
Right. And we've seen this same trend from Capcom up until the most recent quarter when they released a Monster Hunter World patchy slot machine.
Which is kind of what tipped things over, namely because all of like a bunch of their machines had come, you know, they're under the new rules now and they've been updated, and it kind of seems like not everybody else is quick to move.
I was really surprised, especially in retrospect, after looking at the rest of the quarter for a number of Capcom's Japanese headquartered companies.
Yeah,
that they managed to pull that off. Also, smart IP. usage. And again, you've got Monster Hunter that continues to trail well. That's very high margin at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a catalog game. And then you've got Resident Evil. Resident Evil 3 wasn't as good as Resident Evil 2 Remake.
In terms of how much it sold.
Right, but now there's so much buzz for Village, which comes out in the beginning of next fiscal year. There's so
I
much,
wonder why.
There's a ton of buzz for Rise, which comes out before the end of the current fiscal year for Capcom.
That's going to be a huge lift, too. So it is interesting to see how the other Japanese companies are faring in comparison, because Bandai Namco has obviously been taking on publishing as well. They have a number of games that they publish that are third party to them.
Yes.
And outside of the IP that they normally publish.
Because they're the publisher of the Dark Pictures Anthology? Dark Pictures Chronicles?
No, the Dark Pictures Anthology.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they publish that. They are the publishers of the Dark Souls series.
Yep.
Are they publishing Elden Ring? I think they are.
They might be. I'm not entirely certain. But that's where we're going to continue to see lift for Bandai Namco and in their toys and merch. These are all really, really important.
Because
they've got beautiful licensed collectibles that they have through their online store. Specifically through their branded online store.
They also... This might surprise you. They also have a tabletop presence. There was the Resident Evil card game that they released. They released the Uncharted card game, I think, that I have.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
I know how much you love your video game branded tabletop games.
Yeah, I think I ended up getting rid of the Resident Evil game because I had one of them, and it was self-contained, but it was clearly missing something because it wasn't the first one.
Oh.
It was a neat little card deck building game.
I don't remember. I don't even think you showed that one
to
me.
Yeah, I don't. I think I divested myself a while ago.
Must have been, because I've been here for 4 years.
Yes. All right, okay. So that's Bandai Namco. Let's jump over to Take-Two.
Yeah, let's check it out. So, shockingly, for Take-Two's third quarter of fiscal 2021, net revenue is down 7.4% to $860.9 million. Interestingly, recurrent spending is way the heck up. 57%. And it accounted for 62% of total net revenue.
Now, let's talk about this for a second, because we'll get to net income and we'll talk about the effects.
But the recurrent stuff is where Take-Two really does shine.
It does, and that is very high margin. That's not to say there aren't costs related to creating that content. So we're talking about my team players and cards. We're talking about Grand Theft Auto Online new content, which was a big mover for them.
Yeah, absolutely. But even weirdly Grand Theft Auto 5.
Right.
Which is old as heck at this
point.
Exactly.
Anything that's related to Social Point mobile games, or Red Dead Redemption Online, or Red Dead Online. So even though the net revenue was down, remember that's only one side of the equation.
It
is. If the expenses are contracted as well, then what you end up seeing, and we're going to talk about this in a second,
you
end up seeing is that the bottom line still goes up.
Absolutely.
So largest contributors were what?
So the largest contributors were NBA 2K21 and 2K20, Grand Theft Auto Online and Grand Theft Auto 5, Red Dead Redemption 2 and Red Dead Online, Social Point's mobile offerings, the Mafia Definitive Editions and Mafia Trilogy. Listen, I bought the Mafia Definitive Editions because, of course, I did.
Mm-hmm.
Borderlands 3, the WWE series, and my personal favorite, Sid Meier's Civilization VI.
Now, I tend to believe, based on looking at these for years and years and years, that they are in order of contributors.
It could very well be. You know what? I don't mind Civ 6 being at the
but
bottom.
But Civ 6 is on the list, so that's
important.
It is
very important.
Now, Digital net revenue.
This was up 4% to $728.5 million and accounts for 85% of total net rev.
Yeah. So that's not just full game. That's full game plus recurrent.
That's full game plus recurrent.
So 85% of their revenue did not come by way of retail.
And that's, again, like, that's the trend that we started to see before the global pepperoni, and we are continuing to see it on the long tail.
Now, the largest contributors to digital net mirror exactly.
Literally exactly.
With the exception of NBA 2K20 and 2K21 flipping.
Yes. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Very, very interesting. So this all adds up to net income actually being up 11% to $182.2 million. And it turns out that that's also because they sold $40.6 million of one of its investments.
But I tried to find any detail on this. I listened, you know, looking through the call transcripts, looking through anything.
Did you find it in their filings?
I didn't see anything. I didn't look at the SEC filings. So I'm not sure. So I didn't dig that far. So that's something I'm still interested in finding out. Because that's obviously no small.
No, that's an enormous
revenue bump.
That's an enormous revenue bump. And that probably helped boost their net income overall as well. Mm-hmm. So net bookings were down 8.3% to $814.3 million. And overall, Grand Theft Auto Online, Grand Theft Auto 5, NBA 2K, Mafia Definitive Editions and Trilogy, and Red Dead Redemption 2 all outperformed.
And despite being down in the third quarter for net bookings, they're raising their outlook from $3.37 billion to $3.42 billion for the full year. Now, right. They do have some releases in fourth quarter. There's more WWE 2K Battlegrounds DLC. There's more Civ 6 DLC as part of the Frontier Pass. Kerbal is launching in China on Tencent's Wii game platform.
That's a biggie.
Outer Worlds' first DLC, Peril on Gorgon, is releasing on Switch.
Yes, and for next fiscal year, we're going to be seeing Borderlands 3 Director's Cut DLC, Outer Worlds DLC, which will be their second in the bunch.
And the final one, I think.
And the final one, I believe. Grand Theft Auto 5 will be coming to PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and the extra small, likely in Q4 for fiscal 2022. Grand Theft Auto Online will be coming out in the standalone will be coming out in the second half of the calendar of this calendar year. It is going to be exclusive to PlayStation 5 for the first 3 months. And then Kerbal 2, which will be, I guess,
not this coming fiscal year.
It's not this coming fiscal year. It'll be next coming fiscal year. So it'll be fiscal 2023. So April 1st, 2022 to March 31st, 2023. Yeah. I feel like we're in weird future times. Every time I say like 2020 something, it's distressing.
It is.
Because it's like I look at my video game that I'm playing right now, 13 Sentinels, and they talk about 2025. And I'm like, what a glorious far-flung future that must be. Wait, that's 4 years from now.
It is. So
walk me through what you ended up digging up from the earnings call.
There's just a couple things that stood out to me. GTA 5 has now crossed the 140 million sell-in mark for units.
They didn't talk about the sell-through?
Well, and here's the thing. With the shift to digital, the gap between sell-in and sell-through has narrowed because sell-in includes digital. Mm-hmm. So every digital copy sold is both sold in and sold through at the same time.
That's fair. And that accounts for, how much did we say? 85%.
So given that only 15% was retail, it used to be that sold in and sold through were so far apart.
Well, because the number used to be flipped. It used to be you'd see 85%+ in physical.
Or 100% because there was no digital.
Exactly. Before the before days.
Right.
Before digital marketing.
So when you're shipping a game at launch, right? It may have been 50% sell through.
Sure.
40% sell through because you were stocking the channel. You're stocking every retailer. You're talking GameStop, Best Buy, Toys R Us, Target, Walmart.
Pour one out for American Toys R Us.
I do. So they sold more copies of GTA 5 in 2020 than any other year except the year that GTA 5 launched, 2013.
Well, you know what? That's really interesting. Why?
Gosh, I don't know how they keep selling copies of GTA 5.
Is it just because there are no other GTAs to play?
I mean, you can still play GTA 4. Yeah, it's on PC.
But I'm so confused. I find it very vexing.
This one does continue to mystify me that GTA 5 as a standalone keeps
Listen,
selling.
Red Dead Redemption 2 continuing to sell makes good sense. It's only been out for 3 years.
Right.
But I am really struggling to understand how a game that's been out for almost 10 years can, like, sold gangbusters 7 years after it came out.
I have to believe that this is the knock-on effect of the pandemic, where people really
I'm sorry, the what?
The knock-on effect.
No, I'm sorry, the what? The
global pepperoni.
The global pepperoni, okay.
That people want to get into GTA Online, and therefore they're buying GTA 5.
Oh, right, because it's not standalone. Ooh, good thing for us to keep an eye on, though, yes. Is when the standalone comes out, is how is that going to affect sales for Grand Theft Auto 5?
My belief is that, and Take-Two is very good about this, especially with related to Rockstar games, because remember how they staggered first the original release on 360 and PS3. Mm-hmm. And then the PC release, and then the new gen release. And it feels like they understand the decay curve of those games. So my guess is the timing for Grand Theft Auto Online standalone isn't because it isn't ready. It's because they figured out that's the moment in the decay curve
that
where
it
it's going
to
spike again. And they're going to spike that recurrent revenue.
Ooh, man. And they are pretty amazing when it comes to recurrent revenue. Yep. All right. Let's continue.
Yep, GTA Online spending outperformed the forecast and grew 28% year over year.
Whoa.
Those are them shark cards, yo.
Absolutely. It looks like Red Dead Redemption 2 has sold in 36 million units.
Yeah, that's great.
That's amazing.
It's never going to be as big as GTA, because GTA is a phenomenon all its own. But 36 million units is nothing to sneeze at.
Absolutely. Certainly.
NBA 2K21 has sold in more than 8 million units. Remember, that just came out a few months ago.
And remember that was the whole kerfuffle that we saw around pricing. So right. I would imagine that even though it is popular, and you can tell that from the 8 million units that have been sold in, they're going to have to be real careful about pricing going forward.
Absolutely. NBA 2K net bookings were up 48% and recurrent spending was up 67%. Again, this is what we continue to see. And this is the piece of what we saw, what we talked about in the very first week or 2 weeks of the show about a year ago, that people are going to be investing more in the games they already own.
Yeah.
And that recurrent spending. So Fortnite, NBA, Minecraft, all of those games that are established. Apex is a good one. So we're starting to see that trend, or we're still seeing that trend continue.
Yeah.
Where recurrent spending continues to do well. It's not that HD game sales or full game sales aren't doing well. It's that recurrent spending has been the big theme of the global pepperoni.
It must be because, would you like a little engagement with your revenue?
Yes, exactly.
I love it.
So quick reminder, and this came up on the call, that despite Embracer's acquisition of Gearbox,
which we've talked about
with Gearbox, technically.
We talked about that last week.
We did, yes. And Embracer earnings are going to hit this week, but we might be able to work those in. This week, next week, I don't know.
We will see.
Yes. 2K is still going to publish Borderlands. And one thing they mentioned was there are other games from Gearbox they'll be publishing that haven't been announced.
Interesting. All right, so getting into some of the HR stuff. Take-Two now has 4,900 employees worldwide and appears to have 93 games in the pipeline.
Which is exactly the number they said a year ago, 93. I think they're pulling that number out of their keister.
It kind of seems like it. So they're claiming, and this is a claim because we can't substantiate this, because nothing's been announced. 63 are core gaming, 17 are mid-core, 13 are casual, half of them or so are existing IP, 72 of 93 are PC and console games, and the rest are mobile.
There you go. So okay. That's Take-Two. Again, no big shocks there.
No.
But it's interesting to see some of the detail around...
The revenue, to me, was probably the most interesting in how they kind of balanced everything to still make a profit. And I have to believe that part of that is selling that big investment. If you can... if we can dig out what it was that they divested from...
Sure.
Then we
will
definitely...
I'll check the SEC filings because it was a busy week.
It was.
It was not that I didn't have interest in finding out. It was just that...
Everything
Time
kept
is a precious
happening.
Resource.
Everything kept happening, and we continue to only be human.
Yes. Despite the augments I attached to my body.
Wait, what?
I have a unicorn horn now.
I'm so proud of you. It's really beautiful. Wait a second.
I'm a magical creature.
You are a magical creature.
Speaking of magical creatures.
Honestly, Zynga is kind of magical. Let's talk about Zynga. So the reason why I went really in depth with Zynga, because it continues to be such an interesting story to me. So just to do a little bit of background, and I do this almost every time we talk about Zynga. So Zynga in, you know, before Frank Gibeau took over as CEO in 2016.
And his predecessor being Don Mattrick of Xbox One infamy.
Oh, boy. All right. So Mattrick did a number at Zynga. And yeah. by a number, I mean a small number. Zynga was one of the first major players in the casual gaming market. They really were. They were the first
Mafia Wars on Facebook.
Absolutely. They were the first to the scene in a lot of this.
And
Facebook social gaming was something that they did a ton of back in the early days of Facebook. So here's the deal. They did really well for a long time, and then when social gaming started to take a nosedive and everybody started moving over to mobile and everybody started moving over to games that were a little bit different and Farmville suddenly didn't have much of a lift anymore, you know, things just got really stagnant. So when Frank took over in 2016, they were floundering in their KPIs all across
the board.
And remember,
prior to being at Zynga, he was at EA, and
That's
his
right.
last stint at EA was running EA Mobile.
Yes. So Frank knows his stuff.
Yes.
He really does. Now, they had sizable net losses, like in the millions of dollars every year. And since then, Gibeau has not only managed to ensure profitability, but this is sustainable profitability.
Yeah, Zynga being a real player again when everyone thought they were
toast
for the dumpster.
Yeah, that they were toast. They were just making trash games and it was just all garbage. Well, Zynga actually publishes and handles some of the biggest mobile games on the market, mm-hmm. especially out in the West.
So what stood out to you?
All right. So this was a record-breaking quarter as well as a record-breaking fiscal year. So they reported on full fiscal 2020.
So they are in a calendar year cycle.
They
like
are.
Activision.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. So they had their highest revenue. So we're going to talk about Q4 2020 and then get into the full fiscal.
Great.
So they had their highest revenue and bookings performances in Zynga history, with revenue of $616 million, up 52% year over year, and bookings of $699 million, up 61% year over year.
That's wild.
No. It gets even wilder. All-time best advertising revenue and bookings of $117 million, up 47% year over year.
Which is a shift. Remember at the beginning of the pandemic through, I would say, summer, we saw advertising significantly dip.
So part of the reason for that is that they needed to figure out a way to create a hybrid model between in-app purchases and in-game advertising.
Okay.
And that requires real-time bidding and understanding the balance of the in-game economies and understanding the different player types, like which players respond better to advertisement, which kinds of advertisement, and at what time do they respond to said advertisement versus who's better at just IAP.
I'm scared about how much data these companies must churn through in order to specifically target individual users or user groups.
It's really, well, for me, you know me, I love data. Mm-hmm. You know, I did data-driven design for a number of years for a good reason. Data really, really does, you know, really make me happy. So the advertising revenue and all of this doesn't surprise me, knowing that they have been doing we talk about Niantic being nimble, mm-hmm. right? And how they were extremely nimble with Pokemon Go and with the Harry Potter AR game as well. Well, Zynga is also extremely nimble and have proven that even in the midst of a global pepperoni where everybody is home, they can hone and change their internal structures to ensure that they are meeting the needs of a number of different user groups and user types.
Mm, gotcha.
So the advertising is really interesting. If you want more information on kind of like what a lot of these major players in mobile are thinking about when it comes to advertising, I actually wrote a great piece about this over on GameSpeed.
Excellent.
Record international revenue of $236 million, which is up 50% year over year.
Man.
International bookings, $280 million, up 57% year over year. Record average mobile daily active users of 36 million players,
whoa,
up 77% year over year. And the best average mobile monthly active users of 134 million people, up 103% year over year.
That's wild.
This is for a quarter.
Yeah.
This isn't even full year. All right. So.
But just to put this in context, remember we talked about Activision. These are amazing numbers, but it just shows how amazing, how huge King is with
oh, yeah.
Candy Crush, because King's
absolutely
numbers are double this.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, and I mean, King is very focused on like one or two of their strongest IPs, whereas Zynga, they have an enormous portfolio thanks in part to their war chest and the mergers and acquisitions that they've gone through.
Now, they also own Words with Friends, right?
They do. So I think they do.
I think so.
I think that that is correct. So anyway, so they generated record quarterly operating cash flow of $206 million, up 119% year over year. And it's just, man, that was the quarter. So smashed the records.
Yeah.
Wow. Smashed internal records for the entirety of Zynga's history.
Okay. Now, how did they do for their full year? Because 9 months of their full year were full on pandemic.
Full on pepperoni times. Yeah. Highest revenue and bookings performances in Zynga history. Wow. With revenue of $1.97 billion, up 49% year over year, and bookings of $2.27 billion, up 45% year over year. Record advertising revenue of $307 million.
Absolutely wild.
Up 12% year over year, and advertising bookings of $306 million, which is also up 12% year over year. So this is the biggie, though. Mm-hmm. This is what makes me so happy, because I've had a number of conversations with people at Zynga that have told me what a great culture that Frank and the executive at the C-suite have enforced and fostered at Zynga to create this diverse and inclusive workspace mm-hmm. for pretty much everybody. And everyone that I've talked to at Zynga, whether they are working at one of the wholly owned studios or they're working at Zynga proper, they love working at Zynga. They really do. Like, they love the culture there. So Zynga announced their commitment to contribute $25 million over the next 5 years toward diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives at Zynga, and not just at Zynga, in the games industry at large.
Wonderful.
They had two big acquisitions in fiscal 2020, including Peak, which is Zynga's largest acquisition, adding two at-scale big forever IPs, Toon Blast and Toy Blast. My mother loves Toy Blast. And Rollic, which is one of the fastest growing hyper-casual gaming companies, according to Zynga, with three of the top 50 downloaded US iPhone games in 2020. These were both really big acquisitions for them. And overall, Zynga generated the highest annual operating cash flow like that they've had of $429 million, which is up 63% year over year.
Wowzers. What other, anything else here that you wanted to talk about? Any big takeaways from the earnings call or the press release?
Absolutely. So I actually didn't look at the press release. I only looked at the earnings call.
Okay.
Because I don't really care what the press release has to say. I wanted to know what Frank had to say. So here's what Frank said in the earnings call. Q4 capped off a truly transformational year for Zynga. Our results were well ahead of guidance across all key financial measures, led by an all-time best revenue and bookings quarter, especially for Words with Friends. So as we look at what they're going to be doing in the next fiscal year, in the coming fiscal year, this really does come down to expanding those marketplaces out. So guidance for fiscal 2021 is going to be $2.6 billion for their revenue, mm-hmm. Which will be up $625 million from fiscal year 2020 actual net revenue.
Yikes.
Which is enormous. It's phenomenal.
It's a 25%, more than 25, 30% jump.
It's a 30% jump. It is absolutely incredible. So looking ahead, what Frank was saying in the call is that they are going to continue their push towards more mergers and acquisitions and ensuring that they are investing in companies that are already doing things really, really well. And that's what Zynga does best, is they don't just purchase companies and then, you know, try to absorb them into Zynga. They just kind of like, listen, you do what you do best. We're here to give you a hand. We want you to make what you're already making, and whatever resources we can give you, we will do it, because we're going to make each other money.
It's good.
So Frank is also saying what they're looking to do is they're looking to expand into cross-platform play.
Interesting.
So they're so these initiatives in their investment include hyper-casual games, cross-platform play, international expansion, building an advertising network, which is different than what they're currently mm-hmm. doing, which is real-time bidding, all of which have the ability to meaningfully increase Zynga's total addressable market. So that's according to Frank. It's going to be an enormous year, I think, looking ahead for fiscal 2021 as they continue to look at a strategy for the breaking into the Chinese market. They currently do very well in Japan and Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and Southeast Asia. They also want to look into expanding into the Middle East, more pieces of the Americas, and as well as building into the budding markets in Africa.
I think it's really interesting. The fact that they did this well and their numbers are where they are without a major Chinese presence, to me, says there is huge opportunity and huge, huge, huge revenue and engagement ahead for Zynga in the coming years.
It would not surprise me if they were, if they hadn't already been talking to Tencent about how to get their games onto Wii Game.
Yep.
Quite frankly, and potentially with a mutual investment. So, you know, Frank continues to be really excited about the future. He has been every quarter, essentially, since he took over as
CEO. Why not? He's doing great work.
Which, you know, like, he and the team leads and in the C-suite and the folks making the games, and they're out there, you know, really hustling and making it happen. Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see how everything comes together in terms of, you know, their key mergers and acquisitions and the cross-platform compatibility. I know that they're very interested in ensuring that players can more readily play together, even onto PC.
Great. Awesome.
So, yeah, that is...
Heck of a quarter and a year for Zynga.
Yeah, I'm really... Like, I love reporting on Zynga because it just gets better and better and better and better. And you just look at this and you're like, huh, Frank should be in charge. Should have been in charge the whole time.
Yeah, seriously. And with that, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
Alrighty, and we're back, so we have two more companies to talk about. We're going to kick off the second half of the show with Sega Sammy.
Oh, Sega Sammy. Again, reminder that this is 9 months trailing.
Yep, their fiscal year ends on March 31st, so they're in the home stretch for the 2020-2021 year.
Mike, what's going on in Sega Town?
Things are a little rough in Sega Town right now.
All
right. Net sales are down 25.2% for the year to 210.2 billion yen, which is about $2 billion.
This also reflects what we saw last quarter from them. Actually, quite frankly, this is what's been going on pretty much the whole global pepperoni for Sega Sammy.
Yes. Operating income, which is a key operating measure, is down 51.8% for the year to 12.5 billion yen, or 119.1 million US dollars. Mm. The loss for the year so far,
Loss for the year.
6.2 billion yen, or 59.1 million US dollars, and that's down from a profit of 22 billion yen, or 209.7 million US dollars at this point last year. Now, here's why.
Yeah, take us through the losses.
Yeah, their pachinko and pachi slot sales are down 56.7%
to
37.4 billion yen, or 356.5 million US dollars. Their gaming sales are down 10% to 167.6 billion yen,
that's...
or 4.6 billion dollars, but income is up 106.8%
All right.
to 33.2 billion yen, or 316.4 million dollars. Okay. Again, we talk about catalog, we talk about high margin games.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here. So even though sales are down for their gaming, things are still good.
They're relatively steady in that particular revenue stream.
Right. Sega also runs resorts.
Oh no.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
They have lost 65.3% of their guests, and sales are down 41.1% to 4.9 billion yen. And a net loss for the division of 6.6 billion yen.
That's a lot.
Now remember, their total loss for the year is 6.2 billion yen at this point. And this division is 6.6 billion yen. So remember, entertainment content is lifting things up.
Wow.
They dropped their net sales forecast by 2.5%, but they did increase their operating income forecast. They also expect to reduce their loss. Now this is really interesting. They're going to reduce their loss to 3 billion yen. For the full year from a previous forecast of 24.5 billion yen. So they're going to essentially narrow that from 233.5 million US dollars to only a loss of 28.6 million US dollars.
Interesting.
So that is That is good management there. That is reacting. Now, remember, we have previously reported on Sega Sammy where they had the voluntary retirement thing to reduce their employee count.
Yeah.
Again, these are things that are out of a lot of companies' control, and where this diversity in operations has been a boon for Japanese companies up until this point. Global pepperoni has actually caused that to bite them in the booty. So, the improvement in their net sales is on the back of gaming, of course.
Of course.
As well as the organizational restructuring we talked about. Now, here's a good one. Amanda, they have a big game coming out in March. Or it's in February. It's actually in a couple weeks, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this little game called Persona 5 Strikers.
I'm very excited.
In the West are doing super well.
That's really great, because Persona 5 is a wonderful one.
I am actually finally really full on digging into Royal, and I am absolutely loving it.
It's so good. I'm so stuck on that one fight.
So, I,
Poor Haru.
Did you go to the box and get all of the...
Of course I did.
Okay, so you have, like, the things that will increase your experience by 15%, and...
Actually, no, because I didn't purchase a bunch of DLC.
That's not what that's from. I think that's from... getting the having a save for Persona 5 regular, isn't it?
That's not on my new PlayStation. That was on that PlayStation.
Well, what I would do then is I would just go play a little bit of Persona.
Create the save. I am 85 hours into that game and I still can't get past that one friggin' boss. Listen, hit me up on Twitter if you want to talk about Haru's dad, because I'm so stuck. And I may or may not just stream the damn thing, and you all can be my backseat gamers.
Can you stream the thing? This is the thing. Did they change their rules on streaming Persona 5? I knew Persona 5, the original release, they're like, nah, no streaming. Meh, no streaming. Which, that's a whole episode unto itself.
Oh, shit.
So, free-to-play is doing very well globally, and their catalog sales, again, as we talk about the gap between lower sales in the gaming industry, the gaming division, and then that high... income jumping 106.8%. That's on the back of high margin catalog sales and free to play.
Yeah.
So Sega Sammy, things are really rough. However, they are going to close that gap in Q4.
Yeah.
And we'll see where things land. But it has not been a great year for Sega Sammy. Again, continuing that trend of diversification usually being a very good thing. But when a lot of your diversification is in live events,
is IRL.
And requires IRL things. Boy, that is not pandemic ready.
No. Unlike Nintendo.
Unlike Nintendo. All right, we got one more.
Speaking of another unlike Nintendo.
Ubisoft.
Yeah, we're talking Q3 fiscal 2021. They are coming up on their final quarter for the year.
So this was interesting, and I don't know how come I never noticed this, or if it's a recent change, but Ubisoft only reports their full financials at the half year and the full year. So at the 6 month point and the 12 month
How
point,
is it that we've never noticed that?
I think wonder if this is a more recent change.
Because I could have sworn that you and I would have noticed something like that. Is it just because we've been so head down for so many years that we're like, yeah, this is totally normal.
Maybe. So on the 3 month and the 9 month mark, and of course we're at the 9 month mark, they only report net bookings and sales.
All right, well, let's dig into it. So sales are up 131.9%, which is excellent, to 965.1 million euro, which translates to approximately $1.17 billion US. Record net bookings hit €1 billion, which is $1.21 billion US. Mike, what went on with the net bookings?
So digital represented 588.4 million euro or $713 million. So that's 58.8% of their net bookings were digital. That's up 67.6% year over year. And PRI,
which is the player recurrent income,
was 218 million euro or 264.2 million US
of
the 588 million euro digital total. So that's up 33.4% year over year.
What happened with their back catalog, though? This is always the good stuff.
And this is what we have been seeing throughout the global pepperoni.
I'm so tickled that we're going to just call the pandemic a pepperoni just to make it less scary.
Yes. We have seen catalog. Again, this is the opportunity for people to go back and play the games they haven't played before. And I think Assassin's Creed games sold super well after Valhalla's success. Back catalog represented 306 million euros. That's up 21.4% year over year. Now, again, we talked about engagement. Like, obviously, Revenue's great. Engagement's awesome.
Yeah.
Because that leads to revenue.
It's true. At least to that PRI that we were just talking about. So in Q3, mm-hmm. Ubisoft had record active players, and December was their biggest month ever in terms of active players.
They had 40 million monthly active users during Q3, which is up 50% over the past 2 years.
They reached 120 million unique players for the first 9 months of the fiscal year, ahead of last fiscal year's total players.
Yeah.
So, amazing.
So in the first 9 months, they're already tracking ahead of...
A full year.
Of the full year, yeah.
So all right, here are some, give me some of the highlights.
Yeah. So Ubisoft was the top publisher across platforms in terms of units sold.
That's not surprising. Mm-hmm. They, especially if we take a look at the breadth of games that came out from Ubisoft in this fiscal year, you know, we're talking especially around the new console launches. You know, we had Valhalla, we had Watch Dogs Legion, we had Immortals, Phoenix Rising. What else came out?
So Watch Dogs, Valhalla, and Immortals were the three biggies.
Perfect.
For the year.
Love it.
And all three of them were in the top seven bestsellers.
That's great. What,
for new gen.
But what was the eighth bestseller? A little game called...
Oh, this is on the Switch.
Yeah, but like...
So for new gen, they were the second highest publisher.
Right.
So they're ranked second.
Yes.
And those three games, so Watch Dogs, Valhalla, and Immortals were all top seven on new gen. On the Switch, Ubisoft was the top third-party publisher.
Yes.
Just Dance 2020 was the eighth bestseller, and Immortals is skewing very heavily towards Switch, which doesn't surprise me because of all of the cues that it takes from Breath of the Wild.
Absolutely.
It's a perfect fit.
It really is. And also Just Dance 2020 is my favorite Just Dance game, period.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla, second bestseller on new gen consoles. It brought in record revenue for the franchise. Its daily active users were twice that of Odyssey.
What?
Yep.
Really?
And
considering
biggest...
how great Odyssey was?
Yeah, and it's the biggest digital and PRI launch for Ubisoft.
Watch Dogs Legion was the fourth bestseller for the new generation and the third largest contributor to Ubisoft's recurrent revenue during this quarter.
Mm-hmm. And as I already said, Immortals was the seventh best new gen seller and very heavily weighted towards Switch. So... Just Dance 20, and I know you're a huge Just Dance.
I love Just Dance so much. Like, I really just enjoy dancing games in general. I mean, if we look back at my teenage years, I had Dance Dance Revolution gaming pads that I used on my PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you do.
As I did, too.
I mean, like, it was just too much fun. My brother and I consistently battled, and that's how we solved disagreements. It would either be we would play ridiculous fighting games, or we would play Dance Dance Revolution, and whoever won DDR won the argument. It was a lovely way of handling it. So anyway, Just Dance 2021, net bookings are up compared to Just Dance 2020. I haven't played 2021 yet, but I loved 2020 so much.
Back catalog again. This theme that we keep seeing about back catalog being a standout over and over and over
again.
And
we knew this. We knew this was going to happen. When we chatted with Dave Oshry, mm-hmm. we had this big conversation about, listen, the big thing that we need to be keeping our eyes out for is people going back and taking a look at the games that they missed. So mm-hmm. the games they'll buy on sale, the games that, you know, that they were interested at some point, but they're like, oh, who has the time for video games? Well, we're in a global pepperoni. Everybody's got time for video games.
So standouts, Brawlhalla, Mario and Rabbids, Far Cry 5, The Crew 2, and Anno 1800.
I need to play Anno 1800. That seems like a game I would really enjoy.
Probably. There's a 200% surge in Just Dance back catalog. Again, woo-hoo! There's that Just Dance again.
Love that.
People needing to move, wanting to move when stuck inside. Absolutely.
Moving joyfully while stuck inside.
They had strong player engagement increase for AC Odyssey and Origins. And again, this is people who probably had them in their library, didn't have a whole lot of time to play them, and went back and decided to dive in.
Or they got Valhalla, they finished it, and they're like, well, shoot.
You can finish that game?
I don't know. Well, James did.
He did?
Oh, he wow. did. No, he actually, like, completed it. That's I'm, like, wild. A third of the way through it myself.
All right. Rainbow Six Siege acquired a significant number of new players, with total players reaching 70 million since the game's launch.
Holy smokes.
All right, so here's an interesting thing. Ubisoft issued 600 million euro in 7-year bonds. They brought in 3 billion euro in capital for general purposes and potential acquisitions. So the way bonds work, well, just real quickly, if you're not familiar with bonds.
I was about to say, yeah, if we could explain what bonds are, because this is interesting. It's not something you hear reported on all that often, because this isn't normally something that American companies do.
Right, they do. I don't think we've really talked about it a lot in the game industry.
Well, because it doesn't... Well, okay, so when I talk about in American companies. I'm talking specifically about in the game industry. Because if we take a look at the earnings reports come back from the biggest companies that are in North America, it isn't commonplace.
Right. So essentially, bonds are temporary money. What you're doing, if you've ever gotten a bond for a gift.
Really?
Yes. Like a birthday gift, or when you were born, perhaps you were given bonds and they matured over a period of 10, 15, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. What happens is you pay X number of dollars. Mm-hmm. So the face value of the bond, right?
Yeah.
You get the bond. So it's a $20 bond. Now, what happens is over time, that bond accrues interest until it fully matures at a much higher rate.
That's right.
So it's money now. The company issuing the bond will pay interest. There are bond coupons. It's a whole big thing. We learned it in finance. It's fun. So
we learned it in finance. It was many years ago.
The top level is you pay the face value, and over time you will gain X number of dollars. That bond will have an interest rate, and it's safe. Bonds are typically considered to be one of the safest investments.
Yeah.
So what it means is Ubisoft is getting all this money in now. They will then pay back that money. They will kind of put that money aside, interest aside, for all those bondholders. And then when someone cashes in that bond, they will probably wait till it's only a 7-year bond. In 7 years, they will get all of the interest that they are owed plus the principal back. That's why it's a very safe investment, because you're guaranteed to get your investment
back. I was under the impression that these bonds had matured. And that's
No, they issued them.
Oh, okay, got it.
They brought in that $3 billion that they're going to be able to use for operations and for acquisitions.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
So that's the thing that I have my eye on is, if you're bringing in this money for acquisitions, now Ubisoft is, and Yves Guillemot talked about this on the call because I listened to the whole earnings call for Color, especially because they aren't often transcribed. He was talking about how they are very methodical about acquisitions. They don't often acquire. They prefer to build internally. Remember,
they do.
Ubisoft is a company that builds its own engines for the most part.
It's true. The big M&A that they tend to do is around tools and technology.
Exactly. So very interesting to see where this is going to go. For the coming fiscal year, these are the releases that we know of. Far Cry 6, Rainbow Six Quarantine, which we'll talk about in a moment, Skull and Bones, Riders Republic, Prince of Persia Sands of Time, which, as we talked about, I think last week, has been indefinitely delayed. Now, indefinite just means we don't know when we're going to see it. Not that it's potentially canceled. It's just taking as much time as they need. Roller Champions.
Yes!
And the soft launch of Ubisoft's first mobile game in partnership with Tencent.
It's also worth noting that the Ubisoft massive Star Wars game is still in early stages of development, so there isn't much color around that yet.
And because of that, I'm going to jump to the last point that we hear. We thought The Division 2 was done in terms of content, but Ubisoft has changed course, probably due to engagement.
And I would imagine engagement is way the heck up in Division 2.
And there is going to be more Division 2 content coming, and some of it will be soon. So the last update wasn't, in fact, the last update. Ubisoft has also said it has not made a decision on raising the price point from $60 to $70 for full price games on new gen consoles.
Which is smart. They're taking their time to really consider. Speaking of intelligent, there was a question on mergers and acquisitions during the earnings call. So like we said, Ubisoft does prefer to develop and invest internally, but they do use that M&A, those M&A dollars, to acquire technologies or teams that will help them to enter a new field. So they're currently planning to continue to invest internally, but they do have cash on hand if they do find a good acquisition target.
Now remember, Ubisoft's ethos is be there first, test the waters, and either increase your investment or get out. They did this with the Wii U. They've done this with VR.
VR was the big one for me. I remember when, you know, it really, when the Oculus started to really catch fire, at least, you know, among early adopters, they got in.
There were three big VR games.
They had their hit into VR, and then they got out.
Yep.
Because it turned out to not be profitable for them, which is understandable. But they are almost always first to the market with new technology. They're an extremely nimble company when it comes to investing in tech. Not so much investing in their own internal culture.
Yes. Which we have talked about
extensively.
And the last thing that was, they received a question about Rainbow Six Quarantine because we're in the middle of this Michigas. And
I really enjoy that you just like threw some Yiddish in.
So someone asked them, are you considering what a name like Rainbow Six Quarantine might mean given you know, what we're going through.
The Global Pepperoni.
Yeah. So they are, in fact, considering whether they should keep that name or go with something else. And I would, in fact, like to propose Rainbow Six Pepperoni.
I love it. I think that's brilliant. Ubisoft, call us. We're here to consult on Rainbow Six Pepperoni.
Indeed. And that wraps up earnings show number 2. Thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish. F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H.
You can't help yourself.
No, I can't.
I love it. It would break cadence if you did it any other way. And I'm at Amanda Farrow. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at our brand spanking new website, virtualeconcast.com, and I will continue to build out that bad boy. And we will even have more written content as soon as we have lives again.
So we'll see you in 2027.
Oh, no. All right. You can also listen to us on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast. Oh, there's one more.
Pocket Sand.
Oh, no. Pocket Sand strikes again. We would love it if you would subscribe. And if possible, we love seeing your reviews on our show.
They're heartwarming.
They're so nice. Like, I went and I took a look at our show page over on Apple Podcasts, and I'm like, oh, look at all these nice things that people have to say. We actually know it really does delight us. So, and even if you don't necessarily love the show, you can let us know what you'd like to see more of, less of, you know.
If it's less of me, we'll try to accommodate.
No, I'm sorry, we cannot accommodate that. However, Mike, how can people get in touch with us if they have questions?
You can, of course, DM us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. You can shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. And if you have some super secret information or don't feel comfortable speaking to us in a less secure format, we do have Signal, so we're delighted to give you our Signal number so you can speak to us that way.
Absolutely. So we will be back next week, potentially only with one episode, I think. Maybe. We might do a hat trick. Who knows? But in the meantime, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
Engagement.